In today's show, we will talk about GDPR. Topics for today's discussion are going to be what is GDPR, consequences of non-compliance, parties involved, data types, rights of the data subject, breach notification, how am I impacted, how to be ready. Now the big question, what is GDPR? GDPR stands for General Data Protection Regulation. It has evolved from the Data Protection Directive, which came out in 1995, and there has been no changes to it ever since then. GDPR itself was adopted in April of 2016 with a two-year grace period, which means that by May 2018, compliance has to be in place. GDPR is in place to address modern use of data, because when Data Protection Directive was introduced in 1995, data use was not as it is right now. There's not a lot of data being collected. And now the data collection and data awareness has become more prevalent. So this new protection regulation has been put in place to address that. And of all, the most important piece is to respect the individual's right to their personal data. So when you give your data to an organization, the data is still yours, and the organization has to ensure that the data is only used for the reason it was collected for, and they will not use it for anything else. You should be able to request that your data gets removed from their systems if you don't want it there. And if it is inaccurate, you should be able to update it. These are basic data requirements, which are also included in PIPEDA. So before we delve into the rest of the GDPR requirements and prerequisites, I thought I'd show this, the cost of non-compliance. Hopefully this will perk up your interest and get you going on this thing if you have not yet started on this journey. If you have, excellent, good job. So it is split into two categories. One is a major infraction, which is going to be fined at 20 million euros or 4% of the annual global revenue, whichever is higher. So notice the fact that it talks about annual global revenue. So if you are an international organization, your revenue across the globe, 4% of that, that's what they're going after. So, and the next one is the minor infraction, where the fine is a bit lower, but nevertheless, it's still pretty high. So it's 10 million euros or 2% of annual global revenue, whichever is higher again. So they have pretty much split these into two tiers. If you wanted more information, you can go to the GDPR Article 83. It explains the details as to what's included, what's considered a major versus what's considered a minor. So to understand GDPR, and now that you understand the gravity of the situation, the cost of non-compliance, it is key to understand these terms, the parties involved in a typical GDPR compliance requirement. So the requirement identifies certain people. The data controller is the entity collecting the data, which is the organization which is going to be providing you the service. So they are the data controller. They might also be the data processor, but they might give this job of processing the data to a third party. So that's why it was decided to distinguish between the two. So data processor is somebody who is processing the data on behalf of the data controller. Data subject, the most important piece in here, is the entity whose data has been collected by the data controller. So in order for the data controller to provide the service, The data subject says, here is some of my data and provide me this service. And what's important is for the data controller is to only collect information that is required to provide the service that is being offered. Don't collect any more data than you have to, because the more data you collect, the bigger the issue becomes of protecting it and safeguarding it. And GDPR is all about that, right? Making sure you collect what you need. And likewise for the data subject, the data subject has every right to question the data controller in terms of what data they're collecting about them. It's well within the rights to question them. The last item is a data protection officer. So the rule is if an organization has more than 250 employees, then they should have a data protection officer, which is a generic rule. It sometimes does not hold true, because you could be a small organization of 10 people, you have a very busy website, you are providing a certain service, and hundreds of thousands of users are using that service. So in that case, you have to make sure you have a data protection officer whose sole responsibility is going to be how do they protect data, how the data has been collected, where is the data stored, to make sure they know where data is at all times. So the data that gets collected from the data subject by the data controller, as per GDPR, it falls into two categories. The personal data, which is the ability to identify an individual, such as IP address, email address, your mailing address, etc. So if you have an IP address and you can you link a name to it, then it becomes personal data, because now you know Joe is using this IP address. So every time this IP address comes in, you know Joe owns it. Let's say Joe owns that IP address forever. It's not a DHCP address. The next set of categories are special categories of personal data, such as date of birth, religion, gender, personal lifestyle affiliations, genetic information, race, ethnicity, health data, etc. So these are considered special categories of data. And the key is, if you collect any of this data, then you have to protect it, and you are in the crosshairs of GDPR. So now you, as a data subject, are providing this data to the data collector. You have certain rights. So the data collector cannot collect data about you without your consent. And the consent is not just a disclaimer on a 50 page disclaimer note and it's hidden somewhere. There has to be on top of that particular page, which you see when you sign up for a new service, there has to be a separate section that talks about consent for collecting data. And it has to be a box. So you cannot assume that if someone has read 20 pages of disclaimers and they've said yes, they have actually consented to providing you their data. So what GDPR also says is the consent has to be explicit. Somebody has to go and do something somewhere to acknowledge the fact that they're consenting to sharing certain piece of data with you. And once they select that check mark, that information should be tracked and stored. So you as a data collector have to make sure that when that checkmark was selected, you record the time and the date, and that information does not get deleted from your records. So because transparency is one of those other things in GDPR where you have to make sure that you are able to prove that you do have the consent from this individual for collecting their data. Sorry, so not the individual, the data subject. It is the individual, but we won't talk in terms of GDPR over here. And the consent is not limited to recording the piece about when they provide the consent. You should also be recording as a data collector when they revoke the consent. So you should be recording when they consented and when they denied the consent, and when they revoked the consent, and if they did this in a matter of 3 or 4 days, so you should have all the logs available. Okay, because if there's any issues, then you're able to prove that between this period you had no data for that individual. The next piece is access. So the data subject has full rights to access their data. So if they want to see what data you have about them, you should be able to provide all their data to them. What that means is, so you as a data collector have to make sure that you know any data that you collect, you know why it is being collected, and where is it being stored, to address such a situation where if somebody comes to you looking for the data, you should be able to go through all your systems pretty quickly and get back to them saying that, Mr. Customer, Mr. Data Subject, this is the data we have about you. And likewise, the data subject can also come to you and say, I don't want any of your services. I would like all my data to be deleted from your systems. So you as a data controller have to make sure that any data that you have about the data subject, you know where it is. And this does not exclude backups. So anywhere you have data, so let's say you do a backup of the data, right? And this data, I know that tapes are becoming extinct. Let's say you have the data in a tape or in a data domain, in a virtual tape library. So you have this data backed up somewhere and it is stored offsite. So you should know where this backed up data is, or if you're backing it up into a cloud for resiliency purposes. So you should know where that is too. So when this data subject requests deletion of the data, then you have to make sure that you know where the data is and you are able to delete the data within a short time frame. It has to be pretty quick. So the key for the data controller is to know at all times which systems are storing the data and how to get to it. And there should be processes identified within the data controller's organization how this is going to happen. So it should not be a matter of, oh, somebody's asking us to delete the data, what do we do? So there should not be such oh shit moments. It should all be thought about, organized, documented, and roles and responsibilities identified as to who's doing what, how does this request come in, who processes it, how does this issue get resolved, how do you close it off. So you got to consider those things. And same thing with data modification as well. So, you know, if I as a data subject find out that my data is inaccurate within your databases somewhere, because that could be used incorrectly. So you, as a data subject, have every right to go to the data controller and ask them to first access the data to see what's there, and then revert back to them with proper proofs that this is why you need the data modified. Because nobody's going to modify data without any proof as such. And the last but not least is the data portability. So, and this goes in hand with deletion, right? Is when a data subject wants to move the services from you as a data controller, you are obliged to provide the data subject their data in a format that is readable. So when you say as a data controller that you have provided the data to the data subject, and if it's all gobbledygook, it makes no sense. So you have to make sure it is a standard format. CSV is a generally accepted format for data. So you provide the CSV and also the field names, and all that information should be there as well. So it is not the data, but all the data descriptors should also be within that archive or file. So what that means is, because this data subject is moving the services from you, they are in effect requesting three things, right? They're saying they're gonna remove their consent. Then they'll say, I want access to the data. Because I'm moving it, you will delete it. And portability is like, you're giving it to me and thank you very much. And your business is concluded. And there are some exceptions where the data controller might need to store certain pieces of data for their compliance and other regulations purposes. And this is purely legit. And this should be identified to the data subject by the data controller that these pieces of data cannot be deleted because of such reasons. So the next piece that is really important is the breach notification. As soon as a breach has been identified by the data processor, they have to immediately notify the data controller. So there's no grace period for this. The moment the data processor finds out, they will notify the data controller immediately. And the next one is the data controller itself. As soon as they find out there has been a breach as in the data subject's data has been compromised, and someone has access to the data, and you know that something has happened, and you're trying to investigate. Don't wait till the investigation has finished. The moment you know for sure that the data has been compromised, you will notify the authorities and the data subjects of the breach within 72 hours. So this is not 72 working hours. This is 72 hours from the time of notification that you received that the data has been compromised. In certain cases, the data controller and data processor are going to be the same body. So you would know right away, and within 72 hours, you have to make sure the authorities and the data subjects are notified. Failure to do so will result in one of the fines that we spoke about. And I think when I read it, I think it's the minor infraction. So 10 million euros or 2% of your global revenues. So, and the other key is for breach notification, you need to make sure, and you have to make sure that the breach notification process is documented. Everybody who's involved knows what they have to do. So roles and responsibilities have to be assigned and agreed to by the parties. And at all times, you should know if a breach happens, what will happen? So if you are a data controller and you have given the processing to a third party, that third part, you as a as the organization which has outsourced this activity has to make sure that your third parties are complying to this requirement. So it falls on to you to make sure that they have all the necessary processes, and they know that when a breach happens, what they're going to do and who they're going to inform. And you as a data controller has to make sure that you know who will inform and what the call tree or the process is going to be within your organization as to how do you get this whole thing going, right? So you're going to call a emergency operations team of some sort. You're going to have a conference call and you're going to discuss it through, and you're going to have notifications coming in. So that whole process have to be very well documented. If you as a data controller or a data processor are fumbling at the point where you have noticed a breach and you just don't know what to do, it's too late to do anything. You are pretty much messed up now. You know, you're looking at least €10 million of fines. And the fine would be on the data controller, not the processor, because data controller is the body who should make sure that the data processor has all the necessary processes in place. And you as a data controller also has to make sure that you have the necessary insurance also in place, because cyber insurance is becoming pretty prevalent these days. So one of the mechanisms of address managing risk is also to insure, get cyber insurance. So make sure that you look into that piece as well. How to get insurance going, how do you notify them, how do you engage them, and what happens after that. We've spoken about what GDPR is, you know, what are the key elements of it. The next piece is, how are you getting impacted? And not you as a data subject, but as a organization, as a data controller. So the key is that if you are a business operating anywhere in the world and you are collecting any of the two classes of the data that are specified in earlier slides, then you are within the crosshairs of GDPR. And the key is the data is about EU citizens residing in EU. So if an EU citizen is not residing in EU and they're residing elsewhere, that data is not coming underneath this umbrella. So the key is it has to be about EU citizens residing in EU. So that should be the basis of your your assessment. I'm not read this anywhere, but I would think is that it implies when this individual, when they provided you the data, they were residing in EU. Okay, so it's the time of the registration that would be key in my eyes, that when they registered for your service, they were residing in the EU and they were a EU citizen at that point of time. And that's why you should be protecting the data. And when I say protecting the data, I'm assuming that you have all the controls in place in your IT systems, such as you have a strong access control mechanisms, such as the databases have unique user IDs, no IDs are being shared, you have strong password controls in place, you are logging all the information as to who's accessing the data, the application accounts are protected, the passwords are changed regularly, and one of the best things would be if you could encrypt all the data that is in the database, That would be key. And also, the data has to be protected when it's in transit. So you make sure that you are protecting it when the data is moving on the wires as well. Who can be the data subjects? So the data subjects can be your employees. So you, if you are in an organization outside EU and you have an employee in EU, then you are collecting information about an EU citizen residing in EU. Hence, you are, you know, required to comply with GDPR. Likewise, customers, if you are collecting information about data subjects that are residing in EU and are EU citizens, you are required to comply with GDPR requirements. So one of the questions that I've received is that, but you know, we all in Canada, we already have PIPEDA. So why should we care? Well, PIPEDA is good, but it is not as prescriptive as GDPR. So just like the Castle Law in Canada says, if you're collecting information about Canadian citizens, you will have to abide by the Castle regulation. Same thing happens over here. If you have PIPEDA compliance in place, good enough, good for you. That only works in Canada, but does not work in Europe. So you have to comply with their requirements, whatever they may call it. It might be similar, but the good thing is if you have PIPEDA in place, you are pretty close in terms of complying with GDPR. So you can use that same collateral augmented with the additional requirements of GDPR, and then you're good to go, right? So if you're an organization operating in Canada, you have all the proper PIPEDA controls in place, you are nearly there. You know, I would say you are about 80% there. You might have to put in some of the processes in place, but you're pretty close. So it should, for you as a Canadian organization, it should be a matter of doing a gap analysis with PIPEDA and the GDPR requirements, and seeing where the gaps are. And once you know that, it should be pretty easy peasy. United States, it's a bit more complicated because there are different state regulations that you have to comply by. And I'm not really sure what the state regulations are because they change, they're different from state to state. But if you think of it, if you are trying to protect people's data, then you are going to be pretty close in terms of the requirements again. I don't know, I can't say it. How close would you be to the GDPR requirements? But you know, you would make a dent there. You wouldn't be starting from zero, hopefully. So how do you plan for this GDPR? Like I said earlier, it is key that you have to know where the data is that you're collecting about data subjects, how you are protecting it, where it is stored. So the key is a solid configuration management database, CMDB, where you are storing all information about all assets in a central location, and which is not an activity that happens once in a blue moon. You are doing it regularly. Everyone knows about it. Everybody knows the importance of doing it and making sure the data is accurate. So collecting data is one thing, making sure it's accurate is the other. So you have to make sure that it's always accurate and it's always current and you know where it is, right? And also, one of the things the data privacy officer has to also make sure is that when the data is being collected by a certain project within the organization, yeah, they have to make sure that as a privacy impact assessment being done has Do you know what the data retention of the data is? How long you're going to be retaining the data? And the purpose of the data collection. Why are you collecting the data? Is there more data being collected than what is required by the service? If it is the case, then don't collect the data. Do without it. Because the more you have, the more you're risking your life. So, sorry, more you're risking your business. I'm sorry about that. So the purpose of data collection has to be important. And having a data privacy officer, always, it's a small investment in the bigger scheme of things. So I would go for a data privacy officer any time, because you have an individual who knows their role, what the role is, and what they're supposed to do. If they can focus on what they're doing, they will be able to get more processes and procedures in place. So the key is inventory of your systems. Know where the data is. Then the next piece is the implementation. You will need to have the policies, procedures, and governance mechanisms to address, how you, through your software or your application, how are you collecting the consent, how the modifications to consent are being collected, how long you're storing that consent information, and the identifiers in that consent also should make sense so that they're tied to the customer. It should not be a matter of going for a phishing exercise once you know, oh, we have the data now. We have to find out who this was for. Because some things change, so you have to make sure where the consent is coming from, who it is. And like I said, collect only information that's required. So your data requirement should be documented and signed off by somebody in the privacy office to make sure that, yes, this is the data we need, and this is why we were collecting it. This is how long we're going to retain it. That should be, and as I said earlier again, breach notification process has to be documented. And everybody has to understand their roles. So the key is in any good operation that is secure and is providing the level of security and assurance that a customer needs and for an organization to operate effectively and securely, they have to know what they're managing. And once you know what you're managing, you should have proper processes, documented processes, and also people understanding their roles and responsibilities. And that's not enough. You should have somebody governing over all this stuff, making sure that, yes, you have the processes, you have the procedures, you have the documentation to support everything. Is it being exercised? Is it being done properly? It is not enough to have it documented. You document something and it goes on a shelf somewhere. Well, it goes into some storage somewhere, and that's pretty much it, right? So you should have a governance and a compliance program in place that makes sure that the controls are being tested regularly. They're not a once a year activity. Your compliance team is doing an ongoing continuous compliance to make sure that the requirements are being met. You don't want to be too late in the game to realize the fact that, oops, you're not compliant anymore. Because the moment you let your guard down, bad things can happen, and you don't want to get fined 10 million euros or the higher limit, the 20 million euros, or the worst case scenario, 4% of your annual global revenue. Hey everybody, hope you found the information I shared with you today to be useful. Please like, subscribe, and share the content in your social circles. If you want to contact me, my contact details are on my website, secunoid.com. The address is also at the bottom left-hand corner of the slide deck. Lastly, thank you for your time, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.